Hi, and welcome to the 19th Hole Golf Show. I'm Ryan Ballengee. Thanks for joining us. You can email me, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. Check us out on our website, golfnewsnet.com, or in our on-demand section for GNN Radio, golfnewsradio.com. If you're a subscriber on iTunes or another podcasting service, thank you. Please check out Golf News Net Radio, a 24/7 stream of golf talk available on our website, golfnewsnet.com, golfnewsradio.com, as well on the TuneIn Radio app. So, as you might imagine, the podcast topic this week is pretty clear. It's Tiger Woods. And I know that we could easily talk about Brooks Koepka and the future of golf, along with Hideki Matsuyama, guys who played together in the last group on Sunday in Phoenix, and just did a tremendous job with Koepka pulling through with a one-stroke win, his first pro victory in the States. But I think that for as much as people want to lament that we continue to talk about Tiger Woods, there is a story here. And it's a very significant story. And the story is that the demise is as big as the rise. And that seems to be taking shape right now. And I say that because Tiger Woods shot 11 over 82 in the second round of the Waste Management Phoenix Open, his worst round as a pro by a shot, and really his worst round ever as a professional by a long shot, because that 81 at Muirfield in the third round of the O2 Open Championship came in gale force winds. This was a kind of dreary day in desert golf, and Woods couldn't find the fairway. He could find a lot of cacti. He could find bathrooms. He could find water hazards. Couldn't find the fairway. And even when he, after not finding the fairway, got close enough to try to chip and putt to save pars, or in a few cases make birdies, he just did everything but succeed in those shots. He sculled them. He flubbed them. He luckily didn't shank one. He putted them in lieu of chipping them. He did all of the kind of things that a 25 handicapper would do over the ball inside of 50 yards. And he did it consistently. It wasn't like it was a one-time thing where Webb Simpson occasionally shanks one and then two swings later everything's fine and we forget all about it. This is kind of full-blown chip yips. And it seems like pretty much everybody that's an instructor believes that. And I think a lot of his fellow players, which is compatriots on the PGA Tour, his peers, all believe that he's got the chipping yips. And we saw it again on display on Wednesday at Torrey Pines as Woods was getting ready for the Farmers Insurance Open, a tournament he's won 7 times at a venue he's won a bazillion times in his life. So if there are no feel-goods at Torrey Pines, I don't know where the feel-goods will come from. And Golf Channel showed 9 hole highlights of Woods' practice round, and it looked bad. Really bad. And Woods flew home after missing the cut on Friday in lieu of staying for the Super Bowl as he originally intended. Wanted to practice, get ready for this event, and not feel like he might potentially embarrass himself for a second straight week. So far, based on the video evidence that we have, it doesn't look like that time spent at home was all that much better. And a quick aside before we wonder about the future of Tiger Woods. Woods was criticized on Tuesday this week by several people, including some of my peers in the media, because Woods went to Colorado to cheer on girlfriend Lindsey Vonn in a downhill ski race in the World Championships in her hometown. And the implication there was that Woods was so embarrassing at Scottsdale, which, hey, he was, that he doesn't have the right to go to Colorado to watch Vonn try to win a World Championship race in her hometown, something that Vonn has said happens so few times in your life that it's really that important to her. So I don't think you can criticize the guy for taking a day out of his life, especially considering what he's produced so far apparently on the ground at Torrey Pines. Doesn't look like those 3, 4, 5 hours he would have spent chipping, given whatever method he's using at the moment, was going to really produce all that much of a change or the breakthrough that he needs to get forward and become competitive again. And I stress, competitive. Not winning, just competitive on the PGA Tour. But I do think that decision to eschew practice and go kind of keep to his promise to Lindsey Vonn that he was going to go watch her ski in a very important race to her, that that gives you an indication of where Woods is with his life. And this isn't to say that Woods doesn't care about 19 majors, he doesn't care about 82 PGA Tour wins or 83 PGA Tour wins, and breaking Sam Snead's mark or Nicklaus's or anybody else's marks that he still has left to go after. I'm not saying that. I think he's still interested in those things. But I also think that since 2009, a lot of things have happened to him that have forced him to reevaluate the priority of golf in his life. His children are growing up. They're kind of in the stage where they're in school now. So he kind of gets to really enjoy his relationship with them. I can't wait for my son to be that old. I mean, I'm going to love every step of the journey, but I can't wait for my son to be that old where we can do even more advanced things together and really have a full friendship. And I can't wait for that. So I'm sure Woods is enjoying that now with his two children. He obviously got divorced. He moved. So those things happened. His life changed dramatically. He was embarrassed publicly. He had to rebuild a golf swing just to play the 2010 Masters, which was detailed in Hank Haney's The Big Miss. And it's a fascinating look at how a guy like Woods figured out a way to just bunt his way around a familiar course and contend, despite the fact that he really didn't look like he had any idea what he was doing just days before the tournament, and just made it work. So that tells you what he's capable of, but that happened. Then he gets involved with Lindsey Vonn, and they seem to have found a bond together, almost like Vonn is pulling more from Woods in terms of inspiration than Woods is really able to extract in terms of on-course performance. But that both seem to pull for each other, as they should, and both seem to draw off of each other's attempts at coming back to be the best and resume that spot where they were in their sport. Vonn's obviously much closer to that than Tiger is it right now. Even if he's 56th in the world ranking, he plays like a guy who's 450th. And Woods is in the midst of a fourth swing change as a professional. A fourth. Third instructor, or I'm sorry, fourth instructor, fifth swing change. So we're looking at a guy who has undone himself so many times with the hope of getting better that there's a lot of scar tissue there. There's a lot of memory patterns that he talks about all the time, probably pertaining particularly to Sean Foley, but he's got memory patterns from Hank Haney and twice over with Butch Harmon. And all of those things kind of confuse your body after a while. It isn't like riding a bike. It would be like if you learned how to ride a bike, you stopped riding a bike, then you tried again, but this time you didn't sit on the seat facing forward, you sat facing backward and leaned your entire body back to grab the bike so you could steer it, you know, grab the handlebars. And then the next time, you didn't even sit on the seat at all, you just stood the entire time and tried to pedal standing up. And then the fourth time, you didn't even actually use the pedals with your feet at all. You tried to use the seat as a headrest and move it with your hands and steer with your feet. I mean, that's kind of what he's trying to do here in breaking down and building back up his swing every time. And I thought a very salient point for Brandel Chamblee in Phoenix after kind of the shock and awe of Thursday and Friday was that each time Woods has rebuilt his swing, it's gone to further depths before he got better. With Butch making that swing change after winning the 97 Masters, kind of 98, a throwaway season. 99 was great. With Hank Haney in 2003, he kind of has a year and a half where he stinks. Second half of 03 and all of 04, and then 05 is great. Then he goes to Foley in 2010. He wasn't doing anything in 2010 anyway, but 2011 was atrocious, and 2010 was pretty bad. So almost kind of two seasons of throwaway, although that wasn't all with Foley, but it was for throwaway. And then he started to pull things off in 2012 and 2013. So he had eight wins in that span. This time, obviously hampered by back problems, a back surgery, having to recover from that, rehabilitate from that, then deciding Foley's not the guy for him because his fixed back gets made worse by Foley's motion, which he never should have gone to in the first place. And now he's got Como. And because he's done this so many times, if you kind of do the mental gymnastics to say, well, I'm almost 39 when I'm making the swing change or kind of embarking on it, and I don't have that much time left to catch Jack Nicklaus, despite whatever I say publicly, that I could win a major in 59, which seems like anything from the truth right now, furthest imaginable from the truth right now. Realistically, if I'm following Jack's arc, I have 7 years to win 5 major championships. I'm going to throw away a year pretty much guaranteed on any considerable swing change, and that's what he had to do to get rid of the mess that was Foley. And then he kind of goes, well, I'm 40, that's 6 years, and if it takes a little bit longer or I get hurt, that's another year. I have 5 years to win 5 majors. Let's go. How do I do this? How do I shorten that window from at least a year, maybe two, to maybe a year, maybe even less than a year? Okay, well, let's do something I used to know how to do, and that was the swing before Butch. Okay, I get the mentality there. I know that motion. I can figure it out again. And at times, it seems like it works. When Woods doesn't get stuck with the driver and actually gets through the ball instead of kind of ducking, as has been his problem for a decade, then it actually works. He does pretty well. But he crouches and ducks through the swing, so he basically moves his body, gets stuck trying to get back to the ball, and fans it way right. The only difference with Como and Foley is, with Foley, it was a snap hook. So instead of kind of going inside out to push it right, he went outside in. You know what I mean? And reverse. So with Foley, he goes inside to the out and then kind of creates the gear effect and goes left. This time he's kind of trying to bring it inside and cutting it too much. And the miss is different, but the idea is the same. And until he kind of corrects that piece of his driving game where he doesn't crouch, it's just not going to work. He's got to eliminate that. That doesn't work for him. That doesn't work for the way he swings the golf club. And so he's got trouble off the tee. He obviously has the driver, or the chipping yips. So if he's got the chipping yips, can't score inside 50 yards. And he can't get off the tee. It doesn't matter what happens with the iron play. If you aren't hitting from reasonable lies, your iron, whatever progress you've made in your iron play, is not going to help you. Because you're always escaping. And if you can't escape good enough to get on the green, then you have the fear that you won't get up and down in two, much less three. So it's just so psychologically damning to know that you can't get up and down, or you're going to really struggle to do it, that it puts pressure on your putter, puts pressure on your driver that already sucks. When you get it in the fairway, you know you've got to score, because it might be your only chance, because the next one might end off the property. So that is incredibly stressful golf. And I've been there. I've been in a USGA, US Open qualifier, when I couldn't drive the ball. And I knew I couldn't. I walked onto the first tee and knew I couldn't drive the golf ball. Fortunately, the first hole was a par 3. The second hole was a 500-yard par 4, and that was the beginning of the end. And I didn't have the mental acuity that day to come up with the emergency swing that I could kind of pull out to get by. Kind of the swing Woods came up with to get by at the 2010 Masters. And so that's where Woods is today. He doesn't have any semblance of a short game. He has no confidence, and he's cavalierly trying to get us to believe that it's just a matter of reps. It's not a matter of reps. It is and it isn't. It is in that he needs to get back into the cauldron of professional golf. He needs to get back under that pressure. He needs to kind of feel what it's like to play tournament golf again, not on the range or not in a practice round where it's just so much more relaxed. You can pull off most any shot when you don't have to think about the implication of failing. It changes when you worry about failure. And not only does Woods worry about failure of not winning, now the failure extends to, can I even get the ball off the ground inside 50 yards? That's tough. Mine was just, I can't drive the ball. I mean, at minimum, I could just change my grip or change where I aim and figure out how to do it. Or come with a cut swing with a hook, you know. It can make it work. And this is really tough. So my question is, how long is this going to persist? I think that's everyone's question. Is this the new normal for Tiger. And I really don't think that's the case. That seems like we're kind of preaching Armageddon here. It's over. He's never going to get better inside of 50 yards. Look at David Duvall. Look at Ian Baker Finch. Blah, blah, blah. It's never going to get any better. But we have a recent case. Henrik Stenson, who got the driver EIPs, actually, and pulled out of the Open Championship. I believe also the PGA Championship. Just a couple of years ago. Because he couldn't hit driver. And he couldn't get off the tee. And all of a sudden, he's in the top five in the world now. And he recovered from that very, very nicely. I'm not saying he's going to do that either. I don't know. You just don't know. But I think that the answer is way more likely to be a Henrik Stenson case than a David Duvall case. I hope that's it. I don't want this to be the end for Tiger Woods, because I think this story deserves to play out with a valiant quest, a good try, a college try at Jack, with maybe a couple tantalizing wins in his 40s, where we'll go, well, maybe this isn't done yet. But if this is kind of how it ends, and Woods will never psychologically recover from whatever the hell Sean Foley did to him, then I guess my question is how long Tiger sticks this out before he goes, this isn't getting any better, and maybe it's time to just kind of shut it down. I don't think he's going to shut it down. But let's say this keeps going for a year. All of this year. Maybe makes two cuts where they're actual cuts. Not like no-cut events where you got to play all four rounds. But actual cuts. And the rest is just downright bad. Scoring average 74. Throws in a 69 here and there. But basic substandard golfer for any PGA Tour player. Much less the best golfer of our generation. If it's that bad, does he come back in 2016 with the expectation that it's going to get better if he doesn't see much improvement? What is the eye for improvement? Obviously, 82 was kind of the floor at this point. So if he doesn't shoot worse than 82 over the next couple of days at Torrey, good, but not great. So obviously, he's got to make incremental steps toward being competitive. So that means he's got to figure out the chipping yips, and he's got to figure out how to get off the tee somewhat consistently. He showed flashes of that at the Hero World Challenge, getting off the tee. I think that the symptom of the chipping yips is the driving problem. So I think if he fixes the yips, the driver kind of gets fixed because there's not so much pressure on him to hit a perfect drive, or otherwise he risks almost an instant bogey. So there's that piece of it. I think those two kind of solve one another. So if he can do that, then the next step is, all right, let's shoot two rounds under par in a tournament. Not make the cut, two rounds under par. You may make the cut, you may not, depending on where you play, but given where he plays, two rounds under par is going to get you through to the weekend. And then try to make some kind of move on Saturday and Sunday. So this is the kind of process that you expect if he fixes the chipping yips. If he doesn't in a year, then we're having a very different conversation next February when we do this podcast. And maybe are shocking all that Tiger Woods never plays golf again. So, I guess I want to hear from you. I want to hear what you think about this. I want to hear why you think he's got the yips, what he could do to fix them, and how long do you think he would tolerate this competitively before he just kind of says, F it, and walks away. Because he really doesn't need this. He's got $1 billion. This is the second greatest golfer ever. No one's taken that from him. And if he's not going to be the first best golfer, why put yourself through the ringer? So I want to hear about that from you. Email me, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. You can check us out on Golf News Net's Facebook page, facebook.com/golfnewsnet. You can also get to me on Twitter, @RyanBallingy. Would love to hear your thoughts on that. I do want to get to Brooks Koepka, and I do want to talk about Hideki Matsuyama a little bit, close out the show on a happy note, not the sad note that was Tiger Woods' last couple of days. So I think a lot of people probably are really just hearing about Brooks Koepka for the first time. If you listen to the show and you read my work, then you probably are someone who's in the know, figuring this was probably going to come this year. Koepka's journey is amazing. I just find it astounding that between him and Peter Uihlein, both of them decided, we're going to go play in Europe. rather than try to work the gauntlet of the web.com tour and revised Q School, which doesn't offer access to the PGA Tour anymore. We're going to earn our stripes, our passport stamps, and our experience, all of that in Europe. And those guys did it. They did it slightly differently. Koepka won 3 times on the European Challenge Tour, which is their web.com tour, to get his status, and then in November won his first European Tour event at the Turkish Airlines Open. Uline kind of got the win shockingly quickly in an opposite field event, but that worked just fine. He got his status, and he's good to go. And he's playing great golf now. He was in contention for the B flight, at least, at the Omega Dubai Desert Classic over the weekend. But I love that those guys sought out this strange-seeming decision, and it worked for both of them in different ways, but it worked. And Koepka seems like he's destined for more greatness than Uline is, but I love that that unconventional wisdom worked off, paid off for them, worked. And what I really like about Koepka going forward is that he knows he is in kind of somewhat luxurious position now. He's got 2 years of exemption on the PGA Tour. He can still play the European Tour if he wants, and he has said he will continue to maintain a European Tour card. He's in basically every big event. He's in all the majors. He's in all the World Golf Championships events. He sets his own schedule. So he's living on cloud nine, but he also knows where he came from. And that's very recent to him. And I think kind of forging your own path as opposed to just kind of doing it under the tour's umbrella, because they kind of coddle it a little bit, even if you're still grinding on the web.com tour. I think that sets them up to be extremely mentally tough. It sets them up to learn how to win anywhere, not just on a really nicely manicured PGA Tour standard course. And I think that makes him really tough to beat, with the combination of his distance, his accuracy, the clutch putting. I mean, that eagle putt was just wonderful. Went 15 to get him into a position to lead the tournament and then win the tournament. He just knows how to close it out. He knows how to win tournaments. And I think that's why you should add him to the likes of Spieth and Reed. Obviously, McIlroy is there by himself. And Matsuyama deserves it as well, because he's got himself in a position time and time again so far this early season in 2015. And he's won in Japan a bunch of times. So he knows how to win tournaments. So that we're almost starting to see a little separation now, I think, that kind of where I'm leading with this, from that group of 20-somethings we started talking about at the front of the year, which was Rory McIlroy, who still remains head and shoulders above anybody else in his peer group, 20s, 30s, 40s, or 50s. And then you have kind of Jordan Spieth, Ricky Fowler, and Jason Day, were the guys we were talking about, because they're all in the official World Golf Ranking Top 10 at the end of the year. And that was kind of monumental, kind of sets the tone for a new generation going forward. At least so far, while Day and Fowler, I mean, more Day than Fowler. Day's been good in his start so far this year. Fowler was modest, T40 or whatever, in Phoenix, which, fine. I mean, it's his first start of the year. But there seems some early separation and some additions into this group. So you've got Rory as the top player in his 20s. Then you've got a different tier of Spieth. I think Koepka belongs in there, Matsuyama, and Reed. And then you kind of got that next tier, which are still great, but they don't close the doors off as you'd like. You got Fowler and Jason Day. But still, this group has expanded from 4 to 7 in the matter of a month. And I think they all deserve to be on your radar. I think they all have legitimate claims to earn your betting dollars if you put down a few bucks in a Masters pool. And I think that is really the total antithesis of the story of Tiger and Phil, by the way, who was a trunk slammer at Phoenix, where he is the all-time leading money winner. Both of those guys, Tiger and Phil, seem to have either reached the pinnacle of their capacity to play at the highest level, or a level of disinterest / distraction with their families and everything else that comes with being an actual human being, that maybe golf isn't the most important thing to them anymore. They've been doing this for 20 and 25 years, respectively. So at this point in their lives, they might have other things they want to work on. And I think they do. And one of those things for Phil is renovating Torrey Pines North Course, which after this week's tournament will begin in earnest. It's $11 million renovation for him. And it's a great opportunity. He's got a project in Canada, up in Calgary, that he's going to be working on as well. So his course design business is booming a little bit. He has ownership stakes in private clubs. He's building out the business that he wants to have post-career, because he's not going to go yuck it up on the Champions Tour, neither is Tiger. They're going to develop business interests and try to pull Greg Norman, not a Hale Irwin. Meanwhile, you've got guys who are so intense and so interested in being the best in the world and getting their guy that's their peer in Rory McIlroy and their cohort, that this is going to make for a great time in golf and a really fascinating transition between generations. And as a golf fan, you cannot be more excited about the possibilities, especially with how well Rory is playing. Even if he blows them all away, it's going to be a fantastic journey to whatever he becomes. And the characters that have developed early on this year and really have set that stage in the last 12 to 18 months are going to be fascinating to watch develop, even if they are kind of second tier to the greatness of Rory McIlroy. That's it for our show this week. Next week, we'll see if Tiger does any better in San Diego. And if he doesn't, we'll try to figure out what to do next. Other than that, we'll see what happens with the whole cast of characters at Torrey, including Dustin Johnson's return to the PGA Tour after a six-month leave of absence. Until next week, I'm Ryan Ballengee saying thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time on the 19th Hole Golf Show.